Coming up on Across the Chains, the Music NFT Spectacular. My two guests today are Italian musician Violetta Zeroni and 3D OG and musician Tony Parisi. Plus, WorldCoin releases its eyeball biometric currency. And Unisat is rumored to be raising at a $50 million valuation and is in talks with Binance. All of this and more coming up on Across the Chains.
Hello guys, it's me, Corval here. Today's show would not be possible without our sponsor, Shimmer Network. Just as a reminder, Shimmer is a DAG-based feeless Layer 1 network that's both fast and highly scalable. You can learn more about them at shimmer.network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. With me today is Tony Parisi and Violetta Zeroni. So hello, Violetta. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us. I'm really good. I'm very excited to be here. Yeah,
we're very excited to have both of you. I mean, as we were discussing before the show, this is mostly a nerd show. So we're kind of excited to get into exciting things like music and NFTs and sort of it's a detour for us, but I think it'll be a fun one. So hello, Tony. How you doing, man?
Hey, Mark, good to see you.
Good to see you, too. So for those of you who don't know, Tony and I are old friends going back like 30 years, although we didn't really meet back then. We sort of started life together as metaverse enemies in the late 90s. So when I was running a thing called The Palace, and Tony is one of the co-creators of VRML. And right. So and then I'm trying to figure out how to describe you because you've done so many things. I 3D OG was the best I could come up with, but why don't you give us a quick introduction to you and your past?
Yeah, so you mentioned VRML. It was the first 3D standard for the internet. So 3D models could be transmitted over the wire, you know, over dial-up modems at the time in the 90s, delivered into your web browser, and you could interact with them, click on them, and then you could visit other 3D worlds or experience other 3D content with that. I've been working on file formats like that on and off for the last 30 years. So VRML was very early. Like I said, dial-up modems, laptop computers. We didn't have these supercomputers in our pockets, you know, smartphones like we do now. We didn't even have all the 3D graphics hardware to make that stuff run really fast and look really beautiful like we do now for video games. So all of that has changed in the last 30 or so years. And I continue to work on 3D standards for that. Most recently, something called GLTF, which has been around for about 10 years and is now being used in every application that does 3D that's connected on a mobile phone or on the internet. So if you've got snap lenses, Instagram filters, 3D models in your PowerPoint that you can spin around, virtual worlds people deliver in a web browser, all that content's built on GLTF, a standard that I was one of the designers of. In addition to that, I'm a software engineer and entrepreneur who's been doing startups for that whole period of time we were talking about, Mark. I was building virtual world startups based on VRML back in the 90s. And then I was an executive at Unity, the game engine company, for 6 years, running VR and AR for them until a few years ago. And then most recently, I joined a company called Lamina One, which I've since left. I'll get to that part of the story in a second. Which is a blockchain company for building metaverse applications, the open metaverse. So focused on 3D media still, founded by Neal Stephenson, the fellow who wrote this novel Snow Crash, which coined the term metaverse, right? So full circle in a really odd turn of events, I went to work with Neal for about 15 months and recently just quit that job and hope to say goodbye to my tech exec life for the rest of my career and just focus on my music because I'm also a musician, but I'm sure we'll get to that story. So yeah.
We'll definitely get to that.
Yeah. And so yeah, been doing 3D tech and standards for a long time, you know, trying to dog food it, as they say, in the industry with content creators, and decided at some point I got to really be on the content side of this. So here I am.
Yeah. The content side is probably the more fun side. So Violetta, let's hear a little bit about you. So you are a musician. Tell us a little bit about your career before you did the music project that we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah, for sure. So I've been a musician for 10 years. I grew up in a little town in Italy, and I've been playing music my whole life. And when I was 18 years old, I participated at the singing competition TV show X Factor. And cool. I got to the final. I was still in school, but I got to the final and was offered a major label deal, which I signed. And so that's kind of how my career started. And, you know, very quickly I realized that, utopian record deal that I'd wanted so much was not what I expected, right? Because obviously what they say is true, but not a lot of people talk about it. When they offer you a 360 deal, it means that you have no power control over anything. Your creativity, your business, your finances, nothing. And I didn't quite know what I wanted to do, but I knew that I did not want to do what they were telling me to do. And
So when Pink Floyd does the, like, have a cigar, Welcome to the Machine songs, where they talk about the music industry, and you hear stories like Paul McCartney losing the Beatles catalog, and and Billy Joel losing the rights to his songs. This is what you're talking about, is this nightmare right here.
Yes, 100% for sure. And of course, at the time I was only 18, and I just jumped into it without even thinking about it. You know, it was pretty much, they lured me into it very, very well. But it's okay. You know, it was a great learning experience. I'm glad it happened earlier rather than later. So, you know, I had time to get out of it and learn from my mistakes, which I did. And then since then, you know, I just developed my independent artist career by just performing. I played hundreds of shows. I wrote hundreds of songs. I've had songs in movies, commercials. I played in movies myself as an actor. And this went on for about, 7-8 years, where I just kind of tried to make it work as an independent musician, and was always blessed, you know, to make enough money to pay my bills. I never had a different job, which I'm grateful for. But of course, you know, I've always had a lot of issues with the current state of the music industry, which is relying on algorithms, pretty much, where you put out your music on streaming platforms and you have no chance to really, you know, rise to the surface unless, you know, you find some weird hacks to trick the algorithm, which I didn't think a musician should be thinking about that. You know, a musician should connect directly to their audiences. And, you know, it became really, really difficult, but I gathered a lot of experience. And yeah, about 18 months ago, I found Web3 very strangely, thanks to my mother, who knew about Web3 before I did. And right. He kind of introduced me to it. And so, yeah, here I am.
Wow, that's super fascinating. So you've actually been through the record industry and that machine. And then your mom comes along. Was your mom like into crypto? Like, was she a Bitcoiner?
No, she's not a Bitcoiner.
How does your mom know about Web3? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Yeah, I know, it's bizarre. She is just very curious. She's just a very open-minded, curious woman. You know, she's 60, around 60 years old, but I feel like, you know, she lives in my little town in Italy, but she just knows a lot about everything, and she's always trying to find opportunities for her kids. You know, she says, you guys have no excuse. You have to try everything. And technology is the future. And if you miss it, you miss out. You get left behind. And so she didn't quite know what it meant, but she had a feeling, and I followed her advice. So
she was like, over here is where you need to go. So let's talk about what you did and show a little bit of it. So you find Web3 and you see this world of NFTs and Bored Apes and all this crazy stuff on OpenSea. And you come along and you decide to do music NFTs, which, to be honest with you, I hadn't heard of anybody doing music NFTs. I knew it was sort of possible, but I hadn't really seen anyone sort of put all the pieces together. So this is your collection on OpenSea. Let me scroll to the top here so you can see it's called Moonshots. And this is one of two collections. I think this is your first collection, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So there's 2,500 items. And they kind of look like this. So it's generative art, it appears to me. Although I know that some of this was hand-drawn, I think, by your father also, right?
Yeah, it's actually all hand-drawn. All the traits and the layers are hand-drawn by my dad. My dad's a Disney artist. He just draws comics for Disney for a living for a long time. And, you know, we collaborated on this. And it is all hand-drawn. He'd never done it before. But, of course, it's layered, and we generated the 2,500 items with an algorithm, pretty much, that, you know, made sure they were all unique. So,
yeah. So then when I, so basically the, it's an image, but also there's this little play button here. And if I click play, I'll hear, there are five songs that are part of this collection. And each one of these images randomly has one of the five songs assigned to it. So I'm going to play a little, is that correct or not?
Well, not exactly randomly. So it's almost like it's five collections. As you can see, you know, the five different designs have each 500 variations. So it's like five artwork covers with 500 different versions. But, you know, the one with the spaceship is one song. The one with spiders is a different song. And you always, you can recognize which song is by the art. Yeah.
Got it. So the spaceship one is always the same song. So let me play a little bit of it so people can hear it.
I would cross the universe and circle around the sun to find that little part of my heart I've never known. And I would give up everything. I would defy gravity, 'cause something's out there telling me I am not alone.
Okay, so I didn't want to play the whole thing, but that was that's great. So so you put these out, and when did you actually put these out? Like when did this happen?
It was April 2022. That was about 3 months after I'd first heard of Web3. So I went in pretty fast.
Wow. Okay. And then how did you find someone who knew their way around actually creating the generative art? Like what was that journey like?
Yeah, really good question. 'Cause obviously when I first came in, I had no clue. I had no clue about anything. I had no clue about crypto, wallets, nothing. So I really had some catching up to do, but thankfully through Twitter Spaces, really, because that's obviously where the community hangs out, I realized that there was a music community already. It was small and very niche, but one of the most successful at the time music NFT artists is actually an Italian saxophone player. Who I connected with. His name is Nifty Sax. And he had put out a very successful, also kind of generative in that sense, collection a few months before, was really successful. And he had just started some kind of like artist incubator. He had teamed up with a dev and they were helping artists launch their collections and guide them through it. And I reached out not knowing they had this project going on. And he actually told me, he's like, it's good you reached out because, you know, we're just starting this venture. So we started working together. I was their first artist and I do owe a lot to them, you know, because the way the collection is structured, the rarities, the frames that define the, you know, the rarity level and the utilities that are attached, we built this whole thing from nothing pretty much in just a month or so. So yeah, really shout out to them and the dev, WayZ is still my dev. So yeah.
Yeah. 'Cause it feels, I mean, Tony, you had some thoughts on this. The music business is broken. You know, Spotify, you know, you guys know, I'm a complete amateur musician, but I put out an album also. So I've been through this process of, you know, just put, you know, how do you put it up on Spotify? Blah, blah, blah. How do you promote it? And it just doesn't, none of it feels good. So Tony, you had some thoughts on this issue. So speak to that.
Well, yeah. And I'll do it by way of just telling my backstory on this and about my current music project a little bit. We can unpack it later, but, I've been a lifelong musician long before I got into the tech business. And I was thinking pretty hard about going deep into the music business back in the 80s. And I was in bands. And in fact, some of my bandmates ended up going on to be pretty successful indie musicians in their own right and having their own creator battles later on. But I decided instead to pursue a career in tech. And when I made that split, though, I never stopped doing music. And I worked on a bunch of music projects, including writing this full musical about the end of the world, which we'll talk about a bit, called Judgment Day. And I finally recorded all the demos for Judgment Day and started making a record in the period between 2020 and 2022. So during COVID lockdown, I recorded the demos. In 2021, I recorded the album and I started thinking about how I was going to release it. Meanwhile, I'd been watching the evolution of digital music, everything from file sharing, you know, Napster and LimeWire and the basically theft of all IP to, you know, the big labels coming and saying, you can't steal those artists' IP. That's our IP, striking deals and creating the streaming services like Spotify and, you know, doing all these deals to make it so that people are legally streaming the music, but they forgot one little thing, which is actually to be able to pay the artists fairly. So when you watch this and you see what the take rates are like, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, a million streams gets you $3,000 in revenue on Spotify. And think about what it takes to actually get a million streams and what kind of promotion you need to do. And artists need
So Violetta was talking about gaming the algorithm on Spotify, right? So, because after you put your album up, right, how do you get people to listen to it? That's the
You pay to get on playlists. You work really hard to find influencers. You try and game the algorithm. Yeah, yeah. Shake your booty like people are doing on TikToks now, doing ridiculous things to get.
Well, there's all kinds of like scams, like pay me and I will get you on playlists on Spotify, right? Because I've been through this. Because I put an album up and I'm like, okay, how do I promote it? Like, there's no good way to do it, and it just looks like you throw money after money after money, and you don't really get listens. Even if it's good stuff, right? Like there's no radio station you can go to. You know that if you get played on this radio station, you're going to get listeners. That doesn't really exist in Spotify world, right? So yeah,
there's all that, and I mean we can unpack that at length. And you know, Violetta went through this too, where she was just questioning whether she wanted to even keep going on this. And so for me, this is what I was thinking about a lot a couple of years ago, as I wanted to get Judgment Day heard in the world. And I was also already in crypto. I was starting to buy art NFTs, visual art NFTs. And I was curious about what was going on in music land so that I could see if maybe there was a way to release my music as NFTs. And just started innocently, sort of searching around for people talking about this. And I found Violetta. I found Violetta and a couple of other musicians early in 2022 talking about their projects. And I went on a Twitter space, and Violetta's talking about the Moonshot collection. She hadn't dropped it yet. All these cool utilities she was going to have around it. And I'm like, wait, how can you do that with an audio file and a bitmap? Like, you need to write a smart contract, right? There's no platforms that are doing this. This is, a service like Royal. There were a couple of people coming out, but it was like, this sounds like really custom. And Violetta said, this 27-year-old Italian singer-songwriter, little girl, says, I hired an engineer. I hired a dev. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, she's her own music label. She's doing the entire stack herself, everything, the promotion, the development, the distribution. I'm like, wow, this is really something. Web3 is incredible. It's giving people these tools that really empower them. Seems like a lot of work, but at least they're going direct to their fans. They're keeping most of the money they make. They're sharing it with the developer. Everyone's getting their fair share as part of the supply chain. So that was a light bulb moment for me. And I started collecting Violetta's music because I adore it. And then I found a half a dozen other musicians I really, really like. And I started collecting their NFTs. And that was an investment for me, an investment in their career, an investment in maybe some of these artists actually blowing up. So it's a bit speculative. Like, if you had some rare recording of Bruce Springsteen from some one show, right? Boom, that might be a collector's item at some point. So I was really interested in that.
It's like having an old Elvis 45 from the 50s or something like that.
Oh, imagine what that's worth now. Right. And so, there's some of that, but there's also for me, it was kind of research for me. And I really wanted to figure out how this was being done for my own art as well. And along that way and along that journey, I really became attuned to how bad it is in the current music industry. I mean, we could go on at length about this, but the streaming services really are not returning what the artists need. And so independent artists in particular are up in arms. But even established artists, if you saw Snoop Dogg rant about this being asked about the writer's strike in May, LA Hollywood writer's strike, he said, where the F is the money? Where's it going? I got a billion streams. I can't even make $1 million on that. Do the math, right? So
yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Snoop's complaint is that, this new world with Spotify has really been bad for artists. So he, he's basically saying, everybody's making pennies off of millions of streams. So it's not good. So the alternative is don't do Spotify, go and do music NFTs. And looking here at actually sort of the metrics. So this is your first collection, 329 ETH in total volume. So, that's, roughly half a million, maybe 600K. Something like that. And I assume that's what the price is now. So it's appreciated since the initial launch, but I would imagine, you've done, I would say you've done very well off of this just based on this number right here. And is this a typical number for music NFTs? Like, how many people are doing this?
So definitely, you know, we've done really well with Moonshot, and I think it was due to the way the collection was structured. And obviously, I don't want, if there's any musicians listening, you know, I don't want anyone to think that it's like, you know, somewhat rigged or easy to do. We did turn up every single day for about 20 hours a day for a whole year and a half. So it's like,
wow. And this is for when you can confirm turn up, promotion.
Yeah, but it's very live and organic and really one-on-one kind of promotion. Like the people that you see, 807 holders there, I pretty much hand collected myself through hours and hours and hours of literally performing live, like what we're doing right now, but on Twitter and singing. So yeah, I mean, the collection's done really well, you know, the across, you know, everything. We have about 500 ETH in secondary volume, which, you know, is the money that people have exchanged in the secondary market and made through my music, which is, you know, just insane. If you tell that to a label, they're going to think you're crazy, you know, that an artist like myself could ever do that. And I don't know if those numbers are usual for music NFTs. I don't think there are a lot of collections that have reached that kind of, you know, level of secondary volume. The floor price is double what the mint price was, and it's kind of been steady there. So I feel like it has established kind of its own, you know, ground. Moonshot in particular, my second collection is still finding its place because it's much younger. Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely possible, but I'm also reading some of the comments, you know, it's definitely hard work. Like you have to go out and find your community and, you know, try to innovate all the time with the tech and embrace the tech and not get stuck with one way, you know, cause the tech evolves every single day, you know? So, yeah.
Can I bust in, Mark? I think it's important to point out one more thing relative to Violetta's grind here, which we haven't talked about, which is the other dynamic that's going on between collectors and the artist, is that music artists in particular are offering incredible utility to their NFT purchasers. It's not just about having a collectible, but if you collect certain types of them or certain numbers of them, and Violetta can walk you through how it works with Moonshot or Another Life, you actually are getting more benefits than that. Like Violetta, she holds concerts for her holders. You can go to a Zoom concert, which I've been to many of these. You get on Zoom and Violetta plays live for you.
Okay, I want to get to that.
So but there's an incredible dynamic going on here.
Yes, and I do want to hear about that. So I just want to summarize what I think I heard Violetta say, which is over a period of a year and a half, and promoting, and she promoted it, or Violetta, you promoted it on Twitter primarily. Mm-hmm. That was your primary promotional vehicle, in spaces and just tweeting, I guess, right? And you were like doing it, you know, 15 hours a day for about a year and a half. You got about 800 buyers of your stuff, and the when you minted it, I guess the mint price was about 250 ETH, and it's gone up since then. So it's been a lot of hard work, but you have done it, but the audience is a lot smaller. Also, the flip side is, you know, your audience is 800 people. It's not a million people on Spotify. So quite a much smaller number of people are hearing this music than would hear it on Spotify, but you've made a ton more money. Is that correct?
Yeah. So just to clarify a couple of things. So actually those 800 people are only the holders of that first collection. We have a total of about 1400 holders in our community. So almost double across all my collections. And in order to find those 800, it took me about a couple of months. And then for a whole year and a half, like in order to get to that secondary volume, to get to that floor price, you know, you have to continue show up, you know, you can't just release your token and then leave. Like the fact that you continue to deliver utility and engage with your community, that's what brings in the secondary volume, which you make royalties from, of course. And, you know, now I don't make a lot of royalties anymore because OpenSea cut them down, but that's a different story. you know, the floor price and everything. And you are right. You know, the audience is much limited. So I have, you know, 1,400 people, but those are not 1,400 fans. Those are 1,400 mega fans, you know, which is the key difference, in my opinion. Those are 1,400 people that have at least each spent $150 on me, which, think about it, you know, for someone who is not famous, finding out, you know, 1,500 people almost to invest that amount, it's pretty significant. But of course, I have like 65,000 Twitter followers that follow my music and they go and listen for free everywhere. So we might have to find a solution for them too. But these NFTs that I put out are pretty expensive compared to maybe some others that I put out in the future to expand my audience. This was to build the core foundation of my community of people that I will bring with me forever, pretty much. And I don't mind not having millions of people in my community because I don't know who they are. I don't know what they want. I don't know. I can't be on the journey with them. And personally, I don't do it for the fame. I do it because my dream is to make music for a living, because that's what I love doing. Mm-hmm. I don't aspire, you know, crowds screaming my name. That's an ego-driven dream. Mine is a love-driven dream, you know, the love for music. So, yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the utility. So beyond just the fact that I've got this NFT, what do I get? What are the actual perks and added utility that you have, that you offer?
Yeah, like Tony mentioned, you know, and he's got some of the same utilities as well in his collections. But, you know, what's fun is that you can kind of take, you know, these similar formulas and then adapt them to whoever you are as an artist and what you have to offer. So, you know, personally, when I started, I had no money whatsoever to provide any of like, you know, any weird or fancy things. So I was like, what can I offer as a musician that I think is valuable? And it cost me time rather than money. And it is simply engaging with my community, offering the Zoom concerts that I do every week. I did vinyl records for them, free prints. You know, once I minted my collection, I could afford to do those things. But the main thing is offer me as IP available to my community. So I'll write you a song that you have the license to, and you can use it for whatever business you've got going on. You can book me for a free show. You know, you can commission a song for whatever other thing, and really just continue to provide, you know, the community with my presence, my music, education as much as I can, free mints, of course, more music. You know, I just write more music. The best thing about music is that it is utility created out of thin air. So other projects have to create, you know, some weird mechanism, stake in this and that. An artist can just write a brand new song for you, and it's only yours. How amazing is that?
So basically the utility is I own some of your NFTs. I get exclusive access to Zoom concerts. And, you know, kind of depending on how deep I am in your world, I can even go as high as to get a custom song made for me. So. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I mean, I have a holder, one of my biggest holders right now, who runs a business in the Florida Keys for resorts. And he needed a song for the marketing campaign. And of course, he requested a song from me, which, you know, if we were to do it in a more centralized way, right, using an attorney, doing the whole deal, blah, 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 it would get expensive and I would charge more. But instead, he invested in me and he's saving money, but actually bringing value to his business because he's got a soundtrack for his campaign. So that's like a business strategy, actually.
Super cool. So the other thing that I was thinking about when I first heard from Tony about what you were doing in this whole little, you know, sub world in NFT land of music NFTs, my initial thought was, but NFTs have collapsed. It's like everything's at zero. Bored Apes are worth near nothing, and everybody's, a lot of people have lost a lot of money in NFTs, right? And so, but Tony was insisting that music NFTs were different and that the market dynamics are different. And that does seem to be the case. And so that is it just true for you only, or is that the music NFT scene in general? Like, I'm curious, like, who else is doing this and how are they doing as well also? Tony, do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a handful of big indie artists like Violetta who have had quite successful NFT drops, and they offer, you know, different but, you know, kind of spiritually akin utility for their holders. And they're kind of in the 1% category of music artists doing these kind of NFTs. But they're doing everything Violetta's doing one way or another. They're creating gamified collections. They're offering extreme utility. They're connecting really deeply with their fans. Then there's sort of a larger base of folks who are using the technology of Web3 and effectively platforms that are emerging that use Web3 tech to offer music in the form of NFTs, where people are still paying more than they pay. You know, they're paying more than the 99 cents typically for a song that you're getting. And they're getting a digital collectible in exchange for that, which includes the music, some piece of art. So it's sort of like buying a single, but you're buying it for 10 to 20 bucks kind of thing to US. And, you know, platforms like sound.xyz. And there's a bunch of things emerging there that are offering sort of more affordable, less high touch music NFTs. And people are starting to do a lot there. There's a bit of concern on the part of some of us that there's a bit of a race to the bottom on price points as these platforms want to get scale. Because they're venture-funded businesses, and you know how these work, Mark.
Yeah.
They're looking for numbers, user numbers in the millions to billions. It turns into the same movie I think we've seen potentially with Spotify. So there's some concern, though. The people who are coming out and doing this as startups now are making the right noises, and they're working closely with artists to make sure that doesn't happen. But, you know, we've also seen the movie before. So there's just a concern that, you know, they're going to go the way of venture funded companies. They're going to need to scale more and more. They're going to squeeze the artist. They're going to, you know, take as much profit as they can. So there's a big concern there about anything that gets centralized. But, you know, to answer your, because ultimately they become centralized again. And what we've been talking about
right.
is the decentralization of music. It is going straight to your customers. It is using the tech as supply chain, as enabler, not being dominated by the tech and being, you know, just in another controlled distribution scheme effectively, right? So when you get to these things that scale up, there's always that, you know, question and danger. And then there's other folks, you know, there's plenty of other people who are like, here's just the tool. We just want to get paid. Like, this is a tool and there's enough people using it. We can scale up. We're not trying to control the whole stack, right? So we'll see. But yeah, to answer your question directly, there are a lot of other people who are definitely making income. Can't speak to whether or not they're, you know, thriving in this world, because they'll do a single drop on sound and that might net them, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 for a song. But Violetta, how much does it cost to make a song in the studio?
I mean,
typically more than $2,000 or $3,000 unless you're doing it all yourself at home, right?
Yeah, which is also, you know, I feel like at this point artists could, you know, an artist like me could say like, okay, I'll just sell a song for 20 bucks, but I'll just record it at home. You know, it's like that kind of thing. You can also do that. The best thing is that you can be super creative, you know, and like really adapt, you know, the technology around what you're doing. So, you know, at the end of the day, I support kind of all ways, but yeah.
Yeah. And you've even thought about it for some of your other songs, you said, right? You might do some that are more affordable, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. Because that's the thing. Like, once you have a strong, like, core community, like, with everything, right? Think about the Bored Apes example, right? They created their core, you know, Diamond Hand. Well, not, I don't know so much anymore. But, you know, 10,000 holders or whatever for the first 10K. And then they expand their supply and they, you know, lower the price. And, of course, the floor prices, you know, reflect the supply amounts and stuff. So I feel like you can apply that to music artists, too. You know, once you've built your strong community, a lot of people struggle to grasp the concept of music NFTs. And I'm not sure why, because I struggle to grasp the concept of apes, to be honest. Like, why would
you?
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like music makes so much more sense than just collecting a picture of a monkey. And I get it, it's a collectible, but like, why? Music is exactly the same way. You know, it's just people are used to consuming music like McDonald's, like Big Macs, you know, but it's not that way, really. Yeah.
Have you guys ever been to an NFT conference?
Yes.
Like either one of you? Oh, yeah. You have. Yeah, I went to one here. I went to NFT LA twice, actually. And, you know, I the previous years I'd spent sort of on the road going to every crypto conference on earth, mostly in sort of the ICO phase, but also in the DeFi phase of things. And those people and you know, talks and products were very sophisticated with, like, you know, bonding curves and this and that and, you know, stable coin mechanisms. And then I went to the NFT conference and it was very much like the Jersey of crypto. And, you know, we're instead of these like sophisticated things, there are all these booths that were like, okay, my business model is it's a ghost and it's a rapper, but it's in 1700 And like, that's it. That's the business model. And, you know, and somehow these people are actually making money with that. Right. But it was a very, very, very different vibe. And most of it, I just didn't understand. Like, I got to be honest, I'm mystified by it also. So,
but a lot of those projects crashed at the end of last year.
And a lot of those projects crashed.
The Aletas didn't. And these other music artists didn't. And that's what I was talking to you about, Mark, if you remember. Yeah. So these projects survived that bear market of last year because, again, the artists are connecting with their fans, are offering real utility on an ongoing basis. And the people who are collecting believe in the growth of these artists and their projects.
Well, I think it's two things too. I think Violetta, like now that I've heard her music, like the music is very sophisticated, right? Like as sort of a pseudo musician, I can hear that there's a lot of very well crafted bits and things in there above and beyond most musicians for sure. And I think that's sort of, you know, that's one part of it. You hear the quality. But it's also poppy, like, right? It's also accessible. It's not so intellectual that you can't, you know, it's like jazz that you can't follow. The average person can. It's actually very pleasurable and poppy to listen to at the same time, which is sort of what the Beatles and other people mastered as well, that sort of blend of those two worlds, right? So I think that's one part of it. The other part of it is that you are just, you're working, you're marketing. You are, you know, each one of those 800 people is hard won. And probably took like 40 hours of work, or I don't know, whatever. I don't know what the ratio is, but probably there was a whole lot of work that went into each one of those people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, one-on-one sales, right? Kind of. So, and I don't think most people could succeed at this. I think that's the conclusion I'm kind of reaching, because I don't think most people have the talent and most people have the, you know, moxie to go out and do the sales. Like a lot of artists don't like the sales part of it, right? Like,
see, I look at it, Mark, like it's like the indie bands of the 80s and 90s we came up with. They would just do it on a local scene. They would do it in Seattle. They'd do it in Boston. I was in the Boston music scene, and that's how you found your 1,000 true fans at the Rat, at the nightclub.
The Rat Skeller, yes. I remember the Rat Skeller.
Exactly. I gigged there plenty of times. And so, you know, now it's divorced from geography. I mean, you've got a global audience and you've got these digital tools which help you connect a lot better and, you know, sort of much more asynchronously than the live gigs. But to me, it's got that same feel of just an indie music scene, which doesn't need, again, back to Violetta's point, you don't need millions of people screaming your name in a stadium. Right?
Yep.
I mean, I agree. There's people that make audiences busking, you know, they go on tour every single day of the year. And it's basically the same thing, but just more comfortable because I do it from my chair, you know. And
that's, yeah. It's a little bit nicer. All right. So I want to show, I want the people to listen to a little bit of Judgment Day here, which this is Tony's thing. So this is a rock opera /musical. And Tony, you put it up on Spotify. So,
there's a whole story there. That? Yeah.
Let's play a little bit of it first.
And then I'll talk to people.
What should I play? Which song do you think I should play here?
I mean, like, do you want to either symphonic, like the overture, or just you can play the track that's minting right now, which is track number 2, if this goes on. Let's do that.
This is it? Okay, I'll play this one.
If this goes on.
That audio is a little squished, but I think people can get this.
Sorry, is the audio not coming through?
Yeah, it's a little squished. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, it's playing that StreamYard. Back. StreamYard's not going to carry the StreamYard.
It was okay for me.
What's that?
It was okay for me.
Okay, maybe that was StreamYard, but. Yeah, what you were hearing is the opening track after the overture dies down, the lights come up, and you hear, this is a musical theater, by the way, you hear Thomas, the protagonist, basically railing against all the evils in the world because we're so irrational and we're just on a collision course with destruction. The story's about the end of the world, boy meets girl, boy gets girl. She's a woman of faith, and he's like a total skeptic and agnostic, and they kind of have a dialogue about faith and reason and all these things against the backdrop of geopolitical upheaval. And eventually a cosmic battle between good and evil, and the world ends. And Thomas, the protagonist, tells you all about it at the end. Very much inspired story-wise by like early rock musicals like Jesus Christ Superstar, but musically more like Tommy by The Who, if you're familiar with that. And yeah, so I wrote that years ago and finally made the record, like I was saying at the top of the hour, and was thinking about how to distribute it when I came across Web3. Now, this is very different, but I think it's a similar story to where Violetta and these independent music artists are going. I think musical theater could use an overhaul in terms of the business, and this is musical theater. So we're talking about doing something new with live theater meets music. So music NFTs might be the vehicle to deliver the music to holders in the beginning, but it's also going to be the funding vehicle to actually do live production. So I'm going to take the proceeds from this project and workshop the live show. And I've already got some production partners for that, and they'll be announcing that pretty soon. And so I'm super excited about it. And so I was so excited about the tools of Web3 and these wonderful artists and the communities they're building and then the folks that I've been meeting that I quit my day job. And I've been unemployed. Well, now I'm employed full time as a musician. Yes, I quit my day job from tech, that company Lamina One I was talking about, founded by Neil Stevenson. I was having a great time there, built a new blockchain tech for the open metaverse. But like I said, I need to be doing the creator side of this. There's plenty of people who can do the tech now. And after flogging 3D tech for 30 years, I think I could take a break and get back to my first love, music. So yeah, that's how I'm doing this. And I'm super excited about the project. And yeah, we're selling them as music NFTs. We'll be offering some different kind of utility. This is live theater. You collect certain kinds of these NFTs, you're going to get VIP tickets when this becomes a live show. And so we're thinking about it that way. And again, it's all about empowering independent artists like myself who would never have a chance to get listens on Spotify without really paying dearly for it, in addition to paying for a record I made. There's no way that's going to happen, Mark. So it's up on Spotify and Apple Music right now. But when I sell the NFT collection out, it comes down from Web2 platforms.
Oh, so you're going to
remove it? It will only be available to holders, or maybe people who purchase, you know, tickets to a live, you know, performance of it or a live stream of it. But it's only going to be available through Web3 mechanisms going forward. There's no reason to feed the click beast that is Web2 music streaming. I mean, they're just getting more plays. I don't get much. I mean, right now, it's basically, I could put it on SoundCloud. It's basically a nice place to host the music so everyone can listen to it and easy links for me to share. Right. And thank you for that, Spotify. But other than that, I'm not getting much value out of it, honestly.
Tony, so, I don't know if you see the comments, but you just, Todd just minted one.
There we go. Bolognao. Thank you, brother.
So your collection, Tony, how many mints are there in it? Is it just, I think it's like 100,
so
right?
It's going to be 1,000 with the whole collection, but I'm dropping them a song at a time. So the way Violetta had done Moonshot, which creates all kinds of complexities, by the way, but I decided to do this rather than one mega collection of 1,000, and just, I've watched these artists really grind on what that takes and you know, to build their audience around that. And it's like, why don't I drop a song at a time, see who my true fans are, really want to support this. They'll know what song they're getting. They're getting generative art made by my wife, Marina Berlin, who's an incredible visual artist. That's sort of like a divination deck, similar to a tarot. So there's some cool, you know, four elements, numbered cards and things like that. So they're going to get some collectibles that are going to have some fun value later as we start kind of exploring the magical universe that is Judgment Day. And so there's 100 NFTs in this first drop. And we have sold now, I think that makes 54 with Todd. Thank you, Todd. So we're more than halfway minted, and early next week, you have placeholder art. If you look at Judgment Day by Tony Parisi on OpenSea right now, you're going to see placeholder art, which is the album cover. But we're going to do the reveal next week for holders, you know, such as Todd and other people that we know. So yeah, I'm really excited about that. This is a great way for me to learn and explore. And what we're going to do with each drop is Marina is going to subtly change the background art. There'll still be the four elements, but they'll look different visually. There'll be more gamified factors introduced, some special cards brought in, and all kinds of cool extra things. And this gives us a way to kind of do the collection a little bit more agile, so we can learn what people like. And then, you know, we'll do updates throughout. And my goal also was, the songs tell a story. It's in linear fashion. I'm going to deliver the music that way too. So the next one will be basically the next scene from the collection that's, you know, going to be included in it. So you'll progress through the story as well. So I thought that would be all interesting to experiment with again, after having watched all these other artists do their collections.
Hey, Tony, so you're on OpenSea, right? Just to clarify. So
yeah, but you don't mint it on OpenSea. You would mint it by going to judgmentdaymusical.com, the website. There's a mint page there. It's front and center. Yeah. But you can, if you're on OpenSea, you can see that anything that's been minted already, you can see what people are collecting by typing that in. But again, you'll see placeholder art for now. Yeah.
Hey, Violetta, did you do something on ordinals also? Because you started off sort of in Ethereum world, and you know, everyone who watches the shows knows I'm a big ordinals BRC20 fan. So tell me, what did you do on ordinals?
Yeah, very exciting, you know, for me to dive into the world of Bitcoin in that way. And it's kind of history is kind of repeating itself for me. Dove into crypto because of music, Ethereum first, and then into Bitcoin because of ordinals. So I'm always like, I'm never chasing the money. I'm really just chasing, where can I just print my art like everywhere? Like basically what I'm doing. So when I first heard of ordinals, I immediately was charmed. You know, the idea of being able to put anything, you know, just a stamp of whatever you want on a sat. Right. And first thing I thought is, how can I put my music on a Satoshi? Right. Because I know this is going to be there forever. And, you know, it will transcend my lifetime, my kids' lifetime, hopefully. And, you know, when it stops mining, then it's going to be, that's it. Right. There's nothing, there's going to be no more. And so I decided to write a song purposely for this. And, you know, there's a whole kind of layered narrative around it. My career turned 10 in May of 2023. So, because I started exactly 10 years ago. So, I wrote a song to commemorate the 10 year anniversary, a song called 10 Years, kind of encapsulating the past decade, which is a pretty big deal, you know, for me to be able to say, like, oh God, I made it the first 10 years. You know, it was definitely a struggle, but I made it. And now I'm putting my music on Bitcoin, like the most weird, like vinyl version of a vinyl ever.
And how did you do that? Like, tell me a little bit about how you did it.
Yeah, so we had problems because obviously the file size that you can inscribe on a sat is super, super limited. So that was the main issue. And of course,
I told Violetta it couldn't be done. I was like, no way. She was like, I'm going to do this. I'm like, you're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah, everyone actually told me, no, you're not going to be able to do it. You know, how are you going to inscribe? Like the max, you know, size is like 4 megabytes, but all the Bitcoiners are going to hate you because you're going to clog up the network and you're going to have to work with, you know, someone who's running a node. Like, you know, it's going to be super complicated. It's going to cost you 10 Bitcoin. And I was like, guys, like, calm down. We're going to find a way. And I really wanted an image to go with it as well. So the song I wrote it with this idea in mind. This song is going to be lo-fi. You know, I'm going to be able to crunch it down to 400 kilobytes or less. And it's a 2.5 minute song with an image. So it's practically a video. And so far, it's the longest video ever inscribed on Bitcoin. And it's 350 kilobytes in total size. And it sounds exactly like I had imagined it when I wrote it, which was like, imagine something coming out of an old radio from the 1930s that has that taste of past in it. Because I'm thinking in 120 years, we're going to be listening to this and it's going to be old, but it's not going to get scratched because it, you know, it's going to sound the way it sounded back then, but I wanted to give it this flavor. So yeah, we did it.
So like something on a big troll, it's like, hello, my darling. Hello, my baby. Hello, my, like that kind of, you know, old.
It's like wax cylinder. It's like the wax cylinder, like the first audio inscription, basically.
Yeah, it's a classical vibe.
Yeah.
It's the first music. It's the first song with visuals inscribed, and it's on an uncommon sat. You follow, right?
Oh, really? Interesting. So it's on an uncommon sat.
The interesting thing is that it's on an uncommon, an early one, 2013 one, mind the day I did my X Factor audition. So the day my career ever started, May 26, 2013 at 1 p.m. Central European time, I was in line in Milan with my ukulele on my back trying to get past my first audition. And that uncommon was being mined. And 10 years later,
crazy.
I found it and put my song on it. So yeah,
that's amazing that you found it, because that's hard to do. Those are very difficult to find, is my understanding.
Well, I do want to shout out Rare Satoshi Society, who are a team of sat hunters that actually go out and pan sats, and they found it, and yeah, so they sponsored me with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's wild. So where was it? So where was this? Where was this sold, or has it been sold yet?
I have not sold it yet. It's very, you know, I'm kind of emotionally attached to it, and okay. But of course, I want to sell it, and because the whole point behind this song is this is a gift to the community. Basically, it's me giving myself as an artist. I'm relinquishing my rights to the music as well. So as soon as the piece sells, it becomes CC0. Both the art, which is made by my dad, by the way, and the music will basically have no, it'll be copyright free. So, you know, people will be able to use it however they want. But, you know, it's such an important piece to me that I wanted to, like, live with it for a second, you know, like mm-hmm. own it sure. for a little bit. Like, it really does mean a lot to me, but I think I will put it up for sale, probably do an auction if there's anyone interested in the audience, you know, only serious buyers.
Todd wants to know where they can, where you can find this now. It's on ord.io, right? Or anybody that can view ordinals, right?
Yeah, ord.io is where, you know, the indexer, you can look at it. It's on my Twitter profile as well as my pinned tweet. You can find
okay that's probably the easiest way. Yep,
such a beautiful song too. Yeah, and I mean, you know, it really is the wax recording. I mean, metaphorically as well, it's not just the audio quality that V is referring to, but it's literally one of the earliest recordings of any kind of music on an ordinal, right? I mean, I think someone else had done music a little bit before that, Violetta, but this is the first like full song and video, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it's like the closest you get to like a Spotify thing on Bitcoin. You know, there were MP3s inscribed before, you know, but this was like a complete work, in my opinion, that's mm-hmm. just sitting, you know, and the fact that it's on the uncommon, the market value of that early, because it's an early uncommon, right? 2013, some people lost their Bitcoin from then and everything. The value sure. of the uncommon itself is like $3,000 alone, plus, you know, all the other things. But so, yeah, it's very exciting. That's why I'm kind of taking my time to sell. I wanted to go to someone who really like understands, you know, the value of it. So.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing because most of the Ethereum NFT people don't even know about this world of ordinals to the degree of detail that you do, right? That's actually super impressive, and you know, let alone most musicians don't even know about that, you know. But even within the world of NFTs, most people don't know about that, so it's super impressive. And that you found your way to it very early. It's impressive you found your way at all. It's great. That's amazing.
You know how I found out about ordinals? Violetta sent me the white paper.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, yeah,
I was the tech innovator.
Said, yeah, but when Mark first said, oh, we do nerdy things in here, I was laughing inside because I'm like, he doesn't know that we're huge nerds.
We haven't left the world of nerds. I was trying and we haven't.
Musicians can be really, really nerdy and geeky, and that's
that much has been made clear. So, mm-hmm. All right, so let's we're almost out of time here, but I do want to do a little bit of news. So we're gonna go. I think we're gonna do the eyeball coin because that's sort of the story of the week, right? So you guys, you heard about WorldCoin, which has been around for a little bit, but it's in concept, but it finally launched this week, and the idea is that it's a new cryptocurrency that's tied to biometrics. So in order for you to get a working wallet, you have to scan your eyeball. So there's an iris biometric tied to your wallet, and your wallet, you cannot have a wallet unless you also that works anyway, that can hold world coins unless you scan your eyeball. So the company, and oh yeah, and the last piece is the same guy that did OpenAI or ChatGPT is the same guy that's behind WorldCoin, Alex, and I'm spacing his last name, but you know, same dude. And do you remember his name, Tony? I'm sorry. Sam Altman. Sorry, I'm trying to think of. Yeah, so Sam Altman is the same. It's the same person behind both. And I forget who Alex is, but basically they're talking about the launch of WorldCoin, and they claim that they've scanned 1.7 million irises so far using 210 devices. And it's mostly in Buenos Aires, Lisbon, Nairobi, Delhi, and Bangalore. I've also heard they've got long lines in Japan. So, you know, they're having some success with this. When you get your eyeball scanned, you get 25 free world coins, unless you live in the United States. If you live in the United States, you are not allowed to own world coin, which that's really bizarre, right? And yet they actually, I went and looked into it. They actually have a world coin eyeball scanner on the Third Street Promenade here in Santa Monica. So you can go get your eyeball scanned to get your wallet enabled, but you cannot, you still cannot own WorldCoin or get 25 free coins. So that's basically what they're saying their success rate is. No idea whether this is true or not, but that's what they're claiming. Let me just move on to the next slide here. Sorry, I was looking for my, there we go. So this is a report from somebody who actually went to go get their eyeball scanned. I thought about doing it, but to me, it's too dirty. I just don't want my biometrics out there floating around. I just don't like the idea of it. That's my own personal opinion. So this person disagreed with me. He was like, I read the white paper. I think it's cool. And they went to go get their eyeball scanned. And they were asked if they would be willing to share the iris scan image for analytics and be and save being scanned again in case of an orb upgrade. So basically, even though WorldCoin has promised that the iris scans cannot leave the orb, or cannot leave their purview, clearly it can't. So it's clearly not as secure as they are claiming, or their claims are not correct. So the iris data is not technically not restricted from leaving the orb device. Anyway, I'm going to throw it first to you, Tony. What do you think about WorldCoin, and what do you think about all this stuff?
Thanks. I hate it. I think I'm a little too old for all of this, number one. Number two, I feel like... every science fiction dystopian trope is like packed into one thing with this. The founder of the most powerful AI company in the world is now getting all our biometric data, connecting it to us financially. I mean, this is literally Book of Revelation lore that it's included in my musical Judgment Day. There's a song, I don't know if you got to this one yet, Mark, it's called The Eye in the Sky. It's the same singer as the other song you like, Simon Says.
Yeah.
You know, he's like kind of a indie Eminem up and coming Kanye type of artist, and then he turns into a shill for the global one world government that's going to eat our souls in act two. And yeah. So for me, this is the dystopian nightmare. So I think it's freaking awful. There you go. But maybe I'm just too old. I'd love to hear what Violetta has to say about it.
Yeah, Viola, what do you think about all this?
I mean, I kind of agree with Tony, but at the same time, it's unstoppable, and I think it's really up to us to make the best out of it. You know, I remember there is that episode of Black Mirror where they have that little chip behind their ear where they can rewind memories and stuff. And like, you remember that one?
It's called The Entire History of You. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was my favorite episode. You know, anything to do with like eyes. And so like even the Apple Vision Pro thing where it's like, you know, everything is like in your eyes. Like I like that. I know it's weird, dystopian, and then probably really scary. But at the same time, you know, maybe I don't know. Like we have so many scams with crypto, so many things that, you know, deter people from coming in. That I don't know, maybe these things might help a little bit. I have no clue, but I'll just sit and watch, see what happens. You know, at this point, I don't get surprised anymore. That's the thing. So,
yeah, the pitch from WorldCoin is that they believe that proof of personhood is required. Like, that's the pitch. Like, why would you go get your eyeball scanned? Why is this necessary? Well, in the future, the AIs are going to be so prevalent that proving that you're a biological entity and tying you to money, that's going to actually be something that that's a problem we have to solve. So, Tony,
well, by the people who created, by the people who are creating that problem, it's founded by the very people who are creating this AI problem. So,
well, do you think it's a problem?
Protection racket to me. I don't think it's. I mean, it could be a problem someday. I don't think we're anywhere near that.
Doesn't feel like a pressing problem to me.
Yeah,
to be honest.
Not at all. 100%.
Have you guys heard of I think it's called Oddity. Did you hear about that one where it's a new AI kind of tech company where you scan your face and they'll tell you the beauty products? Like they'll actually make a complete, very thorough scan of your skin tone, your melanin levels, and like the way you are really like aesthetically looking. And they'll just literally come up with the best combination of makeup and like beauty products. And this has gone like the you know, the stock price has gone wild lately because, you know, people are excited about it. And yeah, it's kind of a similar idea. I think.
Yeah, but that's an application. That one makes sense to me. That's a beauty application. Totally cool. I got to tell you, all this stuff, like, yeah, this is why I'm glad I just stepped off the tech hamster wheel for a while. I mean, I'm feeling very liberated because I'm just going to go write songs about all this. I'm just going to go make art about it because it's exceedingly creepy. Yeah.
So Vitalik is still Vitalik Buterin of Ethereum fame. So Vitalik weighed in and wrote, like, when WorldCoin launched, Vitalik wrote a very, very, very long and detailed think piece all about what he thinks about WorldCoin and biometric proof of personhood. And he basically sort of goes through and analyzes all the things that can go wrong. So, you know, obviously I can go get my eyeball scanned, but then I could take my ID and sell it to someone, right? And of course that's going to happen. I could even sell it to an AI. If an AI is in the market for, you know, black market biometric wallet, there's nothing that says I can't sell my ID to an AI. Now the AI can pose as a biologic, right? Sounds like a William Gibson novel already, right? So, and then, you know, ultimately he basically comes up with his, you know, trade-offs between all the different ways in which we can prove personhood, you know, everything from sort of a social graph where, you know, a person can be said to be a biologic if there are, you know, 10 other biologics which verify, like, you know, yeah, I know Tony Parisi, I've known him for 30 years. He's definitely a person. He's not an AI. I vouch for him. And if you can get like 10 other people to say that, then probably you're a biologic. So that's one, that's a social graph based approach. And these are sort of the trade-offs between all of them. And bottom line, he's kind of like, you know, he's sort of neutral. That's ultimately where Vitalik ends up, is he's sort of like, yeah, there's lots of different ways and different approaches. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. Ultimately, we'll just have to wait and see if it, you know, this works out in the end. So he's very sort of non-committal, but he doesn't really strongly believe that this solution will work in the end, I don't think. So
I just want to respond to something in the comments by BlockBytes, because I don't want to join the chat and somehow lose this window. Yeah, I'm working on that musical about the dystopian nightmare. It's called Metaverse the Musical. That's the third one in progress.
Oh, no, not a Metaverse musical.
Oh, yeah, and we're collabing with a bunch of our Web3 musician friends on that, and it's literally about all the... But it's a comedy. It's a Gilbert and Sullivan-style farce. I decided to not do three really sad... I've got a middle one in there, too. But, yeah, so this one's going to be super fun and, like, really jazz hands and total farce. But yeah, now we have to incorporate the orb into it for sure. We're still, this one's still a work in progress.
Yeah. And it's called the orb of all things too. That's like, it's like they're trying to make it creepy, right?
Totally.
So, okay. Well, I think, look, we're coming up a little bit past the hour here. So, we're going to start wrapping up. So Violetta, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. How do people find you on Twitter? Why don't you run us through your plugs?
Yeah, for sure. My Twitter account is Zeroni Violetta, so my last name first and then my first name, or you can visit my website, violettazeroni.com. For all the information, I am currently on a little Twitter break, but I should be back next week. I host Twitter Spaces every weekday at 2 p.m. Eastern. For the people to come in and listen to some music, we host a lot of musicians. We talk about crypto, NFTs, ordinals also. And yeah, if OpenSea, you know, Another Life, my second collection, Moonshot, it's all there. So, yeah.
Okay. Tony, what about you?
@ Aura Deluxe, AuraDeluxe is my Twitter handle. JudgmentDayMusical.com has got all the information about the musical. If you look up my name and Judgment Day on Spotify or Apple Music, you can hear all the tunes. I'll be there in the spaces with Violetta pretty much every day, and I'll be doing my own until we mint out that first drop. We're more than halfway through, so I hope to see you guys all there.
Super cool. Okay, well, my name is Mark Jeffrey. This has been Across the Chains. We'll see you all next time.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.